It's a hot scorcher this afternoon here at Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. It's 5:30. My name's the V-Man, and it's time for Rockin' the Boat. On today's show, we're going to be updating you on the case of Lindsay Parme, the 20-year-old Santa Cruz animal rights activist who is in federal custody, refusing to testify before the federal grand jury in New Jersey. I'll be joined in the studio by the coordinator of the Free Lindsay Support Network, Nick Henze, who joined me last Thursday on the show. Today we're going to give you an update on Lindsay's case. And later on, in the later half of the show, I'll be speaking with David Long. He is a co-founder and DJ at Radio Free Brattleboro, who was shut down on Tuesday, June 24th by the FCC. We'll get the whole story here on Rockin' the Boat. Stand by, stay tuned. Got a whole lot of stuff coming your way. And you are tuned to Rockin' the Boat here at 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Last Thursday on the show, we discussed the case of Lindsay Parme and the animal rights movement in general, and the movement to shut down Huntington Life Sciences. Just to give you a little bit of background, on Thursday, June 12th, 20-year-old Santa Cruz activist Lindsay Parme was arrested outside her home by FBI agents and taken before federal magistrate Howard Lloyd at the San Jose Federal Courthouse to determine whether she would be transferred to New Jersey under the custody of the United States Marshals. Lindsay Parme had been subpoenaed in January to appear before a federal grand jury, which convened in New Jersey. The grand jury is currently investigating animal rights activists and their campaign against the notorious animal testing lab, Huntington Life Sciences, Europe's largest contract animal testing laboratory, operating two facilities in Britain and one in New Jersey. Joining me live in the studio on Rockin' the Boat to discuss this case is Nicholas Henze, an above-ground animal rights activist. He is the spokesperson and coordinator of the Free Lindsay Support Network, which is organizing on Lindsay Parme's behalf. Nicholas, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Why don't you give us an update about the case? Give us a little more background information on Lindsay Parme. What's she being held for, and where is she now?
Well, she's being held as a material witness or an auxiliary witness in regards to this grand jury, which was convened in October of 2002 in New Jersey. She has no charges pending. She isn't a target of this grand jury investigation, yet she faces 18 months in federal prison for refusing to cooperate and act as a witness or an informant or a snitch on the animal rights movement. Lindsay has repeatedly stated that, you know, she doesn't believe that the U.S. government has the authority, or at least the moral authority, to come into the animal rights movement and investigate her and other activists for above ground and legitimate activities on behalf of animals.
That's the voice of Nick Henze. I had a phone call there. I missed some of that. So if you could just let us know again where Lindsay is right now.
Well, anyone's guess is as good as mine, I guess you could say, for the most part. We went to visit Lindsay in jail yesterday after we were told that she was still in the facility, and after driving 3 hours to Santa Rita Jail, we were told that she was shipped elsewhere. The U.S. Marshals aren't disclosing where she was shipped to. The jail has at one point confirmed that she was taken back east, and in the next conversation we've had with them, they've denied that she was shipped back east. New Jersey also refuses to acknowledge that she's en route to New Jersey for the grand jury. So at this point, she could be anywhere in the country. And as far as we know, she's being held incommunicado and hasn't been able to make contact with those of us on the outside.
Now, let's talk about grand juries. What do you know about how often the federal government uses the grand jury tactic?
Well, the grand juries have a long history in the United States to quash and to intimidate and disrupt political movements. Currently, we know of at least six grand juries, federal grand juries, investigating animal rights activists in the United States. But grand juries throughout the world have been abolished in most democratic nations because of the fact that when one goes before a grand jury, they are denied constitutional rights or liberties that allow them to remain silent or allow them the right of counsel within the grand jury proceedings. And for that reason, most democratic nations have outlawed grand juries. And America, once again, we are doing our own thing and kind of flying in the face of what everyone else is doing, I guess.
And Lindsay has thus far basically refused to cooperate with these proceedings. Can you tell us why?
Well, Lindsay has nothing to hide. That's first and foremost what should be made clear. Lindsay refuses to cooperate out of principle. She doesn't believe that she should cooperate with a grand jury whose sole intention is to disrupt and to intimidate political rights or political activists and animal rights activists in general. We live in the time of the Patriot Act where government agents can go into anyone's house at any time, whether they're home or not, and place listening devices and that sort of things, which most people are becoming increasingly familiar with. And so the grand jury really isn't needed because all that information can be garnered through other more clandestine efforts. And so it's my contention that the grand jury is nothing but a tool to intimidate and to disrupt animal rights activists and undermine the efforts of legitimate political activists.
And as listeners may be aware, a person who refuses to cooperate with a grand jury is looking at 18 months in federal prison. Now, maybe you could explain how that all happens. And when somebody is brought before the grand jury and they refuse to testify, they are asserting their Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination, correct?
Correct. You can't apply the Fifth Amendment blanketly across all questions posed to an individual, whether it's in a grand jury or a criminal proceeding. So should Lindsay assert her Fifth Amendment right or other constitutional rights like the freedom of association and freedom of speech, she is denied those liberties once she enters the grand jury room because a federal judge can compel her to testify. And should she not testify, that's when she faces the 18 months in prison. And it's been made abundantly clear time and time again, Lindsay has nothing to say to the grand jury other than to kiss off.
And at what point would she be charged with any criminal proceedings?
Well, she's facing possible criminal contempt of court should she fail to testify, since she failed to appear willingly the first time, she faces criminal contempt. Should she not testify, she faces civil contempt charges, which hold a maximum of 18 months in federal prison.
And I guess since you haven't been able to speak with her, they're giving you kind of the runaround as to her whereabouts. We don't really know her condition, but Lindsay is a vegan, which means that she eats no dairy, no meat. How is she surviving on jail food?
Well, as well as anyone can survive on lettuce and vegan cookies from the commissary, it doesn't really make a very healthful individual, but Lindsay is prepared to do whatever it takes to uphold her morals and her ethics, and she isn't obviously going to eat any animal products, and similarly, she's going to hold to her morals by not cooperating with the grand jury.
We're speaking with Nick Henze. He's an above-ground animal rights activist or coordinator of the Free Lindsay Support Network. There has been a call to action put out by some animal rights activists, and on June 23rd, the Animal Liberation Front issued a communique stating that they basically targeted Skip Borichin's house, and they cited Lindsay Parme as, you know, one of their prisoners of conscience who they were acting out on behalf of. Can you maybe give us some more, idea about what happened on June 23rd?
Well, again, I need to make it clear that the call to action, whether it's underground action in particular, wasn't put out by Lindsay or any of her supporters. These were individuals who really see that those of us who engage in lawful and above-ground protest are being marginalized, we're being alienated, we're being targeted for our political affiliations. We are told in America that we have the right to free speech and that we have the right to stand up and try and make change, but it's becoming increasingly obvious that the second you get anywhere close to making that change you're striving for, here comes Big Brother, here comes the American government to quash any of that progress. And so people are becoming disenfranchised and they're turning to underground direct action like that was taken on June 23rd. People are fed up of being pushed around and people want to support Lindsay any way they can.
Maybe you can explain for some people who may be new or just tuning in and may not be familiar with the term above-ground activist and underground. Can you just give us a little bit of clarity there?
Yeah, certainly. Above-ground activists, we're activists who at times do break the law. Myself personally, I've been arrested numerous times, but they've been above-ground actions, meaning that they're protest-related, they're demonstration-related, they're related to actions that that I don't conceal my identity in regards to underground actions, similar to those taken by the Animal Liberation Front, are actions that are underground, that the individuals who commit those acts, whether it's property destruction or breaking into labs and liberating animals from places of abuse, those are conducted by autonomous individuals who conceal their identities for the sole purpose of continuing to do those activities in the future. So there's a clear distinction of above ground and underground. But it's my contention that both of those are crucial historically to making progressive change in the world.
Again, we're speaking with Nick Henze. We're discussing the case of Lindsay Parme and related topics to animal rights. We have just a few minutes left, so maybe you can talk a little bit about how one becomes involved in these sort of activities and where people can get more information.
Well, if individuals in the Santa Cruz area want more information, they can contact us at area code 831-429-2248. And the number is 831-429-2248. Or they can visit the website nocompromise.org. And again, that's nocompromise.org. Or the other website, SHAC, which is shacamerica.net. And there's links in regards to Lindsay and what other people can do to support Lindsay and to stand up against tyranny and injustice. And I think the most important thing that people can do is to realize that you know, anyone who says that we have the right to freedom of speech without the repercussions of that are, first and foremost, I'd call them a fool. And secondly, I'd tell them to come join us in the real world. And I'm not talking about MTV's real world. I'm talking about the real world where political dissent isn't something that's welcomed in America today. Unless your politics believe that women should remain in the home and subservient to men and animals are nothing more than commodities. But again, encourage people to take action not only against this grand jury, by calling the assistant U.S. Attorney Charles McKenna, but taking action against those who are behind this grand jury. Huntington Life Sciences and animal abusers and any institution of abuse are generally behind these grand juries. And so the most important thing that one can do is target those individuals and those companies that are really the ones pushing these grand juries. There's no illusion that this grand jury isn't on behalf of Huntington Life Sciences. And so I think people should go out there and take action against Huntington Life Sciences. And while we support Lindsay, Lindsay is more concerned with the animals than she is with her own freedom.
And people can send email to Lindsay Parme, is that right?
Yeah. You can email us at freelindsay@nocompromise.org. Again, that's freelindsay@nocompromise.org. And once we find out where she is, we'll forward her those emails. And it needs to begin be reiterated that Assistant U.S. Attorney Charles McKenna, also known as a cowardly scumbag, refuses to acknowledge that Lindsay is in the possession of federal marshals and en route to a grand jury in New Jersey. So, you know, send us a letter and we'll forward that on to him if you'd like, or we can give you his number and you can give him a piece of your mind. But I'd also like to let him know that that I hear Area 51 is hiring, and they've had a history of denying the truth, so maybe he should apply there because he's denying the truth here again.
And that's Nick Henze. He's joining me live in the studio. Any final thoughts in the last minute we have together here, Nick?
I just, again, like everyone to know, and I think more and more people are coming to the realization that you know, the world isn't a great place right now, and we can all talk the rhetoric and say the world is going to hell in a handbasket, but what we really need here is change, and we really need people taking it upon themselves and taking the initiative to stop the real terrorists in their tracks. And the real terrorists are those who are incarcerating people working for social justice, and right now we see the world as the, kind of the battlefield or the game board of the demonstration of American superiority, and we see America dominating and demonstrating its superiority here in the United States by incarcerating a 20-year-old college student who just simply doesn't believe that animals are humanities to do with what they will. So just take action. That's all you can do is openly resist and support Lindsay in resisting government oppression wherever it occurs.
And you're tuned to Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Stay tuned. We'll be speaking with David Long, co-founder of Radio Free Brattleboro, in just a moment. Stand by.
It's time you show us just where you stand. Can't forever go on blaming Lord one man. And every day you're still shaking his hand. Sanctions suggested by many to help. What is the good of that? When you still go on.
Tuned to Rockin' the Boat here on 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org. On the cusp of celebrating 5 years of community radio, the Federal Communications Commission unexpectedly entered the studios of Radio Free Brattleboro in Vermont on Tuesday, June 24th, and ordered the station to cease and desist from broadcasting. That's from a press release put out by Radio Free Brattleboro. I'm joined right now on the telephone by one of their co-founders and a longtime programmer, David Long. Hi, David.
Hello. Nice to talk to you, Vinny.
Sorry to hear about the FCC visit and the subsequent shutdown of Radio Free Brattleboro. Give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch about the station, how you guys came together, and the type of programming you're offering to the Brattleboro, Vermont community.
Okay. Well, we got together in the summer of 97. It was a small group of 5 to 10 people who were, as soon as we started talking, we realized we were all dissatisfied with what was available musically in our town, and we wanted to hear different things, and we saw an opportunity. We organized, and after about 8 months of fundraising and training and research, we went on the air in the summer of 98, and 5 years without any interruptions from federal authorities. We had to change locations a couple of times locally, but we've steadily grown, and we've always supported ourselves with dues, and it was founded on a free speech principle that DJs are, if as long as they behave responsibly, are free to do whatever they want with their program. And we end up with everything from talk shows to heavy metal shows to kids playing pop and reggae, and all the way through the spectrum.
So you've been on the air almost 5 years. You mentioned that you had to change frequencies. What frequency did you start at, and where did you end up at?
We started it, and we're at 88.1 FM until June 17th of this year. And then we made a change, and the change, I think, is unrelated to the visit. But the change was because there was a public radio station that was going to take our airwave, was going to take our frequency. And we were looking at sometime in the very near future of having to compete for that airspace, knowing we wouldn't be able to hold it. Mm-hmm. We moved somewhere else, and I think just coincidentally, we were visited relatively shortly thereafter.
And you mentioned that you've never been the recipient of an FCC visit in the past?
That is correct.
What other kinds of enforcement action has the station received?
Nothing of any note, really. I mean, we've in all our years of broadcasting, there's been one letter in the newspaper in our first few months on the air complaining about kids playing, heavy metal at 4 p.m. And otherwise, the community has really supported us locally, and no one in this whole state has ever said anything about Radio Free Brattleboro except how great it was. I was just approached by a representative of the state of Vermont at a local function, and he asked me for a one-page proposal about how he could get us funding through the legislature on how to expand our range and let us broadcast to more people. So we've been very upfront in being I've seen your website and with your skulls and the FCC incompetence, and we agree with you 100%. But we've taken a very community-based approach to. And I think it's worked. The community has always supported us, and we're finding a lot of support right now too, which is important.
And I read that there's some video footage of the FCC visit. What does the tape show? And did the FCC come with any kind of search warrant?
I do not think that they showed Radio Free Brattleboro representatives a search warrant. I'm not sure. They spoke to the managers of the building before they spoke to us. Mm-hmm. But we do have videotape of the exchange. It was probably about 20 minutes of videotape. And it's pretty good quality, and it does let us know quite well what was said and where they're coming from. I got distracted.
That's cool.
They did not have a search warrant, but they didn't have any paperwork. They just came in and told us to turn off our system. And after a discussion, we did turn it off. We then talked to them more, trying to get information about the app, about what they were trying to get make us do. And then they left. There was a local police officer that they called, I think, because we have a lot of people around our station, and there were a few people hanging out, and they were concerned perhaps about that.
So essentially what I'm hearing is that the property owner let the FCC into the building?
The building is open during the day, but they did visit the office and were directed to our offices.
And
we're in a downtown building, right on the main street in town.
So they didn't leave any paperwork with the DJs?
They left a business card, and they took our staff roster.
So there was no seizure of any equipment?
No, there was no seizure. There was definitely a threat that if we turn it back on, they will come back.
Okay, so you guys basically volunteered...
Attorney General and the U.S. Marshals and seize everything and put it in jail, as they said.
I see. So it was essentially a voluntary shutdown? Is that a proper way of...
So far, yeah.
Okay. I understand now. I wasn't quite sure if it was a seizure or if it was a voluntary shutdown.
No, it was definitely just a visit to tell us to behave. They said something curious, and maybe you know an answer to this. They said that if we don't turn that transmitter back on, we're eligible to apply for an LPFM license.
My understanding of the law is that is correct, that once notified that a station is in violation of FCC laws, that if they comply with the order within 24 hours, they are still eligible. From my understanding of the LPFM rulemaking that went through in the year 2000. However, that doesn't necessarily make the LPFM rulemaking, that doesn't make it worthwhile. It doesn't mean
right.
A whole lot, at least from my reading of the rulemaking. But I guess maybe we could talk about where things are going in Brattleboro with Free Radio there. Has the station had a meeting, and what is the general sense of the collective there? Is there sort of a move to carry on with the station, or do people feel like now's the time to kind of stay quiet?
Well, there's a range. We did have a meeting. This happened Tuesday afternoon, and on Wednesday evening we met for almost 4 hours and continue to meet this morning. We're definitely in a consensus that we need to take some time off the air right now and assess our situation, perhaps get some advice and get some legal advice. And then we had three choices basically, which was to go right back on the air, to take some time and do our research and go back on the air, or to pack it in and wait for LPFM to come to this town. There's an application that's been in for 2 years now with them and has not been granted in this town. So, as we know, that process is really dragged out.
Right.
That being the third option, we've pretty much chosen two and have that second option to do some research and then to definitely explore going back on the air in some way, definitely explore taking on the FCC on some level to remain on the airwaves. We've been a really responsible community presence. We've responded to complaints that people have had before, and we've made adjustments that have appeased them. And as responsible broadcasters, we're feeling that we need to be included in this process. We broadcast at 10 and just recently 20 watts, so we're not even in the 100 watt range that they're offering a license in, and we feel like we're still being excluded from the community, from being able to participate in community radio legally.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with David Long. He's a co-founder and DJ at Radio Free Brattleboro, who were voluntarily shut down on Tuesday, June 24th, after an FCC visit. We have about 5 minutes left, David, so maybe you can give us some contact information. You guys have a website, which is no longer up on the internet, but...
Curious coincidence there. It's hosted on another website, and it has been down since approximately their visit. We can be contacted. I'll give out my my personal email here for people who'd like to contact me at selector, S-E-L-E-C-T-O-R, that's S-E-L-E-C-T-O-R, at sover, S-O-V-E-R, dot N-E-T. And I would be happy to answer questions and talk to people about the situation. We're seeing a lot of interest, both locally and in people we talk to around the country, in this. As longtime unlicensed broadcasters, you know it's going to happen at some point, and when it does, it's definitely still a bit of a shock.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. And if people in our listening audience want to help you guys out, is there a P.O. box or somewhere they can send donations or letters of interest?
Yes, we do have a mailing address, and we would, certainly would appreciate support from all listeners of community radio. Our address is Radio Free Brattleboro, Brattleboro, at Post Office Box 1951, Brattleboro, Vermont. And our zip code is 05302. The number in the studio is 802-258-9879 if anyone would like to leave a voicemail message with us. And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about this on your station. What would your radio station have done with a FCC visit such as the one we had, where unfortunately our DJs who are in the studio at the moment let them in?
Yeah, that's a tough call. If it was me, I would have immediately asked for a search warrant or a seizure warrant or something, and if no paperwork was present, I would have not opened the door. But if there were a seizure order present or a search warrant or something, I probably would cooperate, because at that point you're getting into like a broken door or possibly physical violence of some sort. So it's a tough call, but yeah, I think the best thing is to be informed in advance, and maybe in the future,
right,
if you guys do go on the air, it should be sort of an explicit policy to make that that procedure part of any FCC visit. You know, ask for the warrant and probably put it. We would probably put it on the air immediately, have people come down to the studio, that sort of thing. In fact, here locally, we've been having some of our own interference problems with another station, a Christian rock station that purchased our frequency, 96.3, in Salinas, which is sort of east of here. But they have a directional antenna aimed right at our town, and so it kind of cut off a good portion of our listenership to the east of where we broadcast from, and it's kind of a drag. There's not much we can do about it. They have the FCC gave them a construction permit for this facility, and
right,
it's kind of out of our hands. The only thing we can do now probably would be to move or put up our own sort of translator station on a new frequency to fill in those areas that are now being cut out by the Godcaster.
All right. Do you folks see any legal recourse? Do you see any hope in the FCC activity in Congress right now?
No, I don't have any faith in the FCC proceedings.
I'm not holding out for that either, I guess.
We in fact, as a collective, came to a consensus during the whole LPFM discussion that we would actively not seek a low-power FM license.
Right. So, as we did, too.
I mean, we actively went out of our way not to seek a license. Like, we didn't support the LPFM proceeding one iota. There are many flaws with it, particularly the no pirate clause, which stipulates that after 24 hours of an FCC visit, you're ineligible if you don't shut down.
And
the third adjacent protection standard was kept in place. There's other deficiencies with the LPFM proceeding as well.
Yeah,
but
I feel a lot of sympathy for the people in the urban areas where there's no airspace for them.
I do too.
And I mean, in a rural area, of a town of 10,000 people, and there's only two places on the dial.
Yeah.
For an LPFM.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like in higher areas. I'm sure we both need to go right now.
Yeah, we do. It's right about 6 o'clock. David Long of Radio Free Brattleboro, we hope to hear you guys back on the air soon.
Oh, well, I hope to have you on my show shortly.
I'd love that.
Okay.
All
well,
right.
look for it, because I don't think we're going to go very quietly on this. We're still, as I said, deciding our course of action, but there's quite a few of us who'd like to just go in and start broadcasting and, you know, make them come and take it away.
Yeah. Push their hand.
Really
make them call their bluff. That's how I say.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're definitely a lot of smoke and mirrors over there.
All right. Well,
all right, we'll take good care.
We hope to hear you back on soon, David.
All right. Free radio.
Thanks.
Bye.
And you're tuned to Rockin' the Boat. That was David Long, Radio Free Brattleboro co-founder. Again, once their website's back up, it's rfb.fm, www.rfb.fm. I want to thank you for joining me here tonight on Rockin' the Boat. I'm just out of time. Stand by, stay tuned. Got more coming up.